Some songs are just a song. Some songs are an anthem. And if Jesus saves, Jesus saves isn't an anthem, then I don't know what is. And that third verse that we don't always sing a whole lot, but something that we can shout or praise or cry over the tomb, Jesus saves. Brother, thank you for that. Thank you for that this evening. Thank you, brethren, for the way that you sung it. Thank you for taking time out of your day to come and be a part of this meeting and get to worship together. And just so you know, I don't take it lightly that you've made the choice to be here. A lot of you have been at work all day, and you had stress and various things, been juggling things, cool kids' school schedules, and I appreciate you, and I know this church appreciates you making the effort to be here to worship together, to study together, and I'll pray I'll do my best to make it worth your while to come and to open God's Word together. Pampa people, I love you. You want to feel old? 21 years ago. 21. At least you keep saying we moved 19 years ago, but does that make it any better? You're still old. I'm just saying. I just wanted to make sure. I'm just, you know, not pointing any fingers, but, you know, that general section over there. A lot of happy memories. You know, 21 years ago, and I still got some, vivid memories. So if you want to open your Bible to John chapter 1, that's where we're going to spend our time tonight. And for those that weren't with us yesterday, and I get it, you had to go to your own church, lame, whatever excuse you have, and you weren't with us, let me just very quickly, here's what we're doing all week long, is we're trying to fix our eyes on Jesus. We're trying to get him right-sized and see him for all he is. And I know, in one hand, that seems kind of silly, again, for religious people, but maybe we're the ones most susceptible to taking him for granted because we know him. We're familiar. These thoughts are familiar. And so the whole goal yesterday was to see the story of Christ's life, to see his supremacy, that all things were created by him and for him and through him, and all things in him hold together, and see supreme Jesus. That was yesterday. I want to follow that up tonight. Well, what's it look like for someone who's seen Jesus for all that he is? How's that going to manifest itself? What is the fruit of someone who's seeing the way that they ought to see? And I want to offer you two characters that are found in the book of John and chapter 1. The first one we're going to talk about is John the Baptist. Look, if you would, at chapter 1 and verse 6. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which gives light to every man coming into the world. I mean, so here's John introduced, and he is sent from God, and he does have a heavenly mission, but the text states, but he's not the light. He's not the guy. And then you see once more in verse 15, John bore witness of him and cried out, saying, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me is preferred before me, for he was before me.'" What you talking about, John? Like, folks, I've been pointing you to the one that, yeah, I came first, but I want you to know the guy coming after me, you should prefer over me because he was before me. Well, how can a guy that came after you be before you? Well, that's John 1, 1 through 3. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning. Let me tell you about a guy that, yeah, it may seem like I came first, but he's been around since eternity. And John further elaborates, starting in verse 19. Now, this is the testimony of John. When the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" Because he's doing some stuff. He's gathering a following. He's getting some attention. "John, who are you?" And he confessed and did not deny, but confessed, verse 20, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "Well then, are you Elijah?" "I'm not." "Are you the prophet?" "Nope." And they said to him, then who are you that we may give an answer to those who sent us? What do you say about yourself?" And he said, "I'm the voice of one crying in the wilderness, 'Make straight the way of the Lord.'" Now those who were sent were from the Pharisees, and they asked him, saying, why then do you baptize if you're not the Christ or Elijah or the prophet? And he said, I baptize with water, but there stands one among you whom you do not know. It is he who is coming after me, is preferred before me, whose sandal strap I am not worthy to untie. Y'all, I'm not the guy. I'm here to point your eyes towards the guy. I am not the Christ. In fact, when he gets here, I'm not even worthy to untie his shoes. In verse 29, the next day, John saw Jesus coming toward him and said, behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. This is he of whom I said, after me comes a man who is preferred before me, for he was before me. This is the guy. This is the Lamb. And he has surpassed me. He is greater than me. Brady, I think it's you that said when I asked the question, what does it look like when someone who's seen Jesus, and I'm pretty sure it was you that would say, that said yesterday in Bible class, humility. Y'all see that all over John the Baptist? He's introduced that way. He's going to introduce the light, but he's not the light. And so when he comes on the scene, he is freely telling everybody, I'm not him. I'm going to show you him, but I am not him. In fact, as he's walking along, and here comes Jesus, and he's got his own following. He's got his own disciples. He's shaping up to be his own rabbi, and here comes Jesus, and he's got his followers. Said, hey, y'all look at him. There's the Lamb who's going to take away the sins of the world. Well, there's consequences to that. The next day, in verse 35, John stood with two of his disciples, and looking at Jesus as he walked, he said, this is John said, behold the Lamb of God. And the two disciples who heard him speak, what do? They leave John and go follow Jesus. Does that bother him at all, you think? Negative. Negative. Because his whole mission is to point people to Jesus, to shine the light where it belongs, on the true light. And he does such a good job that two of his disciples leave him and start following Jesus. And John is totally okay with it. When you get Jesus right size, when you see Jesus for all he is, humility is not difficult. Too many preachers think churches are about them more than they're about Christ. And I'll tell you, we don't have the corner on the market, because there is a pile of Christians that think the church should revolve around them and what they think, and they forget that Jesus is the head. And so there's room in the canoe for all of us for paddling, that we all need to get Jesus right size, because when you do that, your attitude changes. John the Baptist saw that because he saw Jesus for who he was. He's the Lamb. I'm not the guy he is. And he does such a good job that his own disciples leave him and start following Jesus. Well, what we find out is verse 37, the two disciples heard him, they start following Jesus, and Jesus turned and seeing him said, what do you seek? What are you looking for? And they said, Rabbi, where are you staying? He says, come and see. And they came and they stayed with him and they remained with him. And in verse 40, one of the two who heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He first found his own brother Simon and said to him, we have found the Messiah, which is translated the Christ, and he brought him to Jesus. Andrew was one of the guys that was following John, and John's doing such a good job of directing their attention to Jesus that Andrew's one of the guys that leaves John and starts following Jesus. And what you're going to find out tonight is Andrew followed the example of his first mentor, John. Andrew finds Jesus, and he goes, it says, and the first thing he does is he goes and finds his brother. Interestingly, in verse 40, when Andrew's first mentioned by name, how was he introduced? And Andrew, comma, how's he introduced? Simon Peter's brother. Anybody else in here a sibling? You Devin Yonce's little brother, right? Right? Like, look, y'all need to know, I love my sister Cindy, and Cindy was very popular in high school. She wasn't just a cheerleader, but like her last 2 years, she was captain of the cheerleaders. Her senior year, she was the homecoming queen. And so in all of El Dorado, Kansas, I was affectionately known, you can guess it, Cindy Cheney's little brother. And Jennifer was the same way. We were known as the little kids, or we were known as Cindy Cheney's little brother. Andrew's the first one to find Jesus. He sees him first. He gets there first. He goes and tells his brother, and pretty much the rest of his career, guess what he's known as? Simon Peter's brother. You think that's going to bother Andrew? Not at all. So the first thing he does in verse 41 is he goes and tells Peter, and he brings him to Jesus. You know, I have the highest compliment for Andrew. Every time we read about Andrew, he's bringing somebody to Jesus. That pretty high praise? He finds out about Jesus, and the first thing he does, I'm going to go tell my brother. And even though his brother is going to forever shine a little brighter in the kingdom, doesn't matter to him, but he goes and finds him, and he brings his brother to Jesus. Keep your finger here. Flip over to John chapter 6 and look at verse 4. John chapter 6, starting in verse 4, the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near, and Jesus lifted up his eyes, and he sees a great multitude coming towards him, and he says to Philip, where are we going to buy bread that we can feed these people, that they can eat? But he said this, it says, to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. It's a setup. Jesus knows what's going on. But hey, fellas, how are we going to feed all these people? And Philip answers in verse 7, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little. And one of his disciples, Andrew, and how is he introduced again? Not once, but twice. How is he introduced again? Here's Andrew, and oh, who is he? Simon Peter's brother. Says to him, hey, here's a lad who has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish, but what are they among so many? And then Jesus begins to perform the miracle. But here we are, the feeding of the 5,000, how are we going to feed them? And it's Andrew who jumps into action and now brings a young boy to Jesus that's going to initiate the miracle. So we have another example of him bringing somebody to Jesus, and we have another example of him being introduced as Simon Peter's brother. One more example, look at John 12 and verse 20. John 12 and verse 20. Now there were certain Greeks among those who came up to worship at the feast, and they came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida of Galilee, and asked him, sir, we wish to see Jesus. And Philip, why don't you just take him? But what's Philip do? Philip comes and tells Andrew, and in turn, Andrew and Philip now bring them to Jesus. And I don't know why we're not told. Like, Philip, they asked you, you take him. But he goes and gets Andrew, and for the third time, every time you read about Andrew, what's he doing? He's bringing people to Jesus. Andrew didn't care that it wasn't about Andrew. Andrew didn't care that he was known as Simon Peter's brother, because in Andrew's mind, it's not about me anyway. That humility is possible when you see Jesus properly, when you get him right-sized in your mind. When you know who he is, only then can you know who you are and know who you are not. And you know where Andrew learned that from? His first rabbi, John the Baptist. Now, to wrap all that into a bow, go back to John chapter 3, and let's start in verse 22. Again, John's like, I'm not the guy. My job is to point your attention to the guy who does such a good job that his disciple Andrew leaves him and starts following Jesus. Well, it happens somewhat again in John chapter 3, verse 22. After these things, Jesus and his disciples came into the land of Judea, and there he remained with them and baptized. So now Jesus' disciples are beginning their baptism ministry. Now, verse 23, John also was baptizing in Anion near Salim, because there was much water there, and they came and were baptized. For John had not yet been thrown into prison. And in verse 25, there arose a dispute between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purification. Some of your translations may say ceremonial washing. And they came to John and said to him, Rabbi, he who is with you beyond the Jordan, to whom you have testified, behold, he is baptizing, and everybody's what? Going to him. We understand Jesus is the one it's all about, but can you empathize with John's disciples? We've got a teaching ministry. We're trying to bring people to the kingdom. We want to show people the truth. And so we're baptizing people, and now Jesus and his disciples are baptizing people, and we're in the same area. And guess what most folks are starting to do? They're following him. And I want to give grace to his disciples, because every teacher wants to have people that want to be taught. Every teacher wants their flock to grow, right? And so they're stressed out about, like, hey, everybody's going after him. Let me ask you think that bothers John the Baptist? He answers, verse 27. A man can receive nothing unless it's been given to him from heaven. You yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but I have been sent before him. And he who has the bride is the bridegroom. But the friend of the bridegroom, who stands and hears him, rejoices greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. Therefore, this joy of mine is fulfilled. He must increase, but I must decrease. He who comes from above is above all, and he who is of the earth is earthly and speaks of the earth. He who comes from heaven is above all. Do you see the picture? They're both groups are baptizing, and now more people are flocking to Jesus, and in John the Baptist's mind, that's the plan all along. Let me just maybe somewhat help us relate to this. My oldest son is 18. And we got a glimpse over that. This is kind of like the last summer before senior year. And there was a time that he went and he was gone for a little while, kind of being a little bit more independent. It was my first taste of, oh boy, right? That day is coming. Some of you are already there, right? I mean, I'm staying with McAllisters and like Benson. And you get it. And like, there's like a joy mixed with sorrow kind of at the same time, right? That like, because what's the plan all along? We're supposed to teach them well enough that they can and they want to move out. There's no regrets there. The plan is for them to go. And so we don't cling to them, because the plan is to raise them so well that they can and they want to. But it's still hard. And you got to sympathize with John and his disciples, because they're trying to teach and they're trying to grow their work. And now Jesus is on the scene and that ministry is growing. But that was the plan all along. And John the Baptist's mind, look, I'm shining the light on him because he is the plan. And this, what does he mean here? Verse 29. He who has the bride is the bridegroom. Who do all these people belong to? John looks at his disciples and asks. Who does the bride belong to? I'm not the groom. You know what I am? It says friend of the bridegroom. If we were going to put that in our vernacular, we have a different term. It's the best man, right? The bride is not mine. The bride belongs to him. I'm just the best man. In fact, as the best man, when I hear the groom is coming close, I rejoice. And he says, now that joy is mine because the groom is here and the flock is his. And he's trying to imprint that on his disciples' minds. Fellas, don't miss out on him because you're worried about your own influence and circle. It's all about him. Who does the church belong to? It belongs to Jesus. You reckon that we got any room for us in application-wise for us? Who does the bride belong to? I'm not the head. You're not the head. It's not my think-sos, it's not my whims, it's not my patterns, it's not my way of outlining, it's not my systematic theologies, it's not how I want it to be, it's not my temperature control, it's not my color of the carpet, it's not what songs I prefer. The whole thing, it belongs to Him for His glory. And can I follow that up with, going back to the illustration we used about raising our kids, who do my children belong to? They're not mine either. And every one of us as parents shares in John the Baptist ministry, because our whole plan is to say, kids, we love you, but guess what? It's not about us. I'm trying to shine the light on He who is the true light. My kids don't even belong to me. They belong to Him. My time, my life, it's not mine either. It's been bought and paid for. I was a slave. I was dead in the trespasses of sins. I had no hope without God in this world. My whole life, there's no such thing as mine. Other than one, Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. I can claim Him. It's all for His glory. So I wanted to follow up yesterday's lesson with some application. We're going to kind of do this throughout the week, where we'll cast our vision on Jesus, and then we'll follow it up with some applications. We're going to do that in Philippians tomorrow night. But what I wanted to give you tonight, what does it look like? What's some practical skin on the bone, something I can see and relate to? What's it look like when someone who's seen Jesus? And here, as John begins his gospel, that is all about John chapter, towards the end of it, there's a lot of other things Jesus did, but these things have been written so that you may believe in Him, and believing you may have life in His name. And the book introduces Christ as the Creator, and then it quickly turns its attention to a guy named John, and he's all about, it's not about me. It's not about me. It's all about Him. And so, brethren, my encouragement to us all tonight, may we follow in the footsteps of John the Baptist and Andrew, whose whole purpose and point, behold the Lamb, follow Him. Now, here's what's kind of cool, invitation song. That Jesus, who died on that cross, a cross of wood, that He spoke into existence, put there by human beings that He breathed the breath of life into, the God of the universe, and Jesus is God, that Jesus is talking to you tonight. Maybe unseen, but just as real, Jesus is still tenderly calling you. Why don't you come home? And I hope we don't fall into that little bit of a trap, maybe just for a little while. I like to give Him grace and say, maybe it only lasts. I don't want to follow in John the Baptist's disciples where we're a little bit worried about our own kingdom, that we won't leave that to follow Him. He is tenderly calling you, look, this isn't home. I am home. He's calling today. Why from the sunshine of love would you roam farther and farther away? He's calling. And if you're not by His side, we, the bride, are here to do whatever we can to get you there. Whatever encouragement we can offer, whatever thing that we can pray about, whatever obstacle, whatever helping hand we can lend to get every weight and encumbrance out of your way so you can come to Him, that's what the bride is here to do. Because we belong to Him, and we want you to belong to Him as well. We can assist you in any way. Won't you come as together we stand and while we sing?
Jesus.